Maybe you've seen those amazing pâté en croûte on Instagram or some food shows. Perhaps you've had a pasty and wondered if there's any relationship to that and classical French food. I don't know, but it's a fun idea. Do you like to eat pâté? Have you ever made pâté? If you've made sausage, you can make pâté. The Eating Liberty Podcast, episode 275, Food and Freedom, once a week for life. Hello, folks. Dan Reed here. Welcome back to the show. My name is Dan, and I'm a classically trained chef. Classically here means trained in the ways of classical French cooking. I'm also a baker, and I can do pastry work too. A chef teaches, and that's the focus of this series. Cooking seems complicated, but at its core, it's pretty simple. In this Escoffier series, I'll be explaining how to cook classical French food. You probably heard the word simple and scoffed. Simple. Simple doesn't always mean easy. It is doable. It will require effort, and the results are worth the effort. So as I said, the Escoffier series continues in Chapter 11, Cold Preparations. On the last episode of Chapter 11, we discussed galantines. One detail Escoffier mentions that seemed new to me was pressing the galantine. I checked with my friend Chef Todd, and he's never done that either. That tells me at least that it's, as a practice, is out of favor. That's all. The galantine was a forcemeat of the thing, chicken or duck most likely today, with garnishes, and all of that put back into the skin of the thing, rolled, tied, poached, and cooled. The next part of Chapter 11 is meat and fish pies. Now, the pies are a bit like what you might be thinking, round with crusts on the top and bottom. That's mostly right. Ovals or oblong dishes were preferred by Escoffier. And the dishwasher serenading us. For a fish pie, make a forcemeat of the fish, pike or sole or salmon. Spread the forcemeat on the bottom of the pie on the crust. Add alternating layers of fish and garnish and forcemeat. Seal the pie with more dough, which he called short paste, egg wash, and bake. When cool, fill the pie with the appropriate fish aspic. Simple, right? I don't expect you to make a fish pie. It's doable. It would make one heck of a Valentine's presentation. Meat pies are similar. Pork forcemeat is the main vehicle for meat pies, with garnish being the featured meat. Ham or veal are two specific pies he mentions. Not to be left out are the birds. Here, Escoffier gets a bit tedious, particularly with the game birds. In some cases, woodcock and thrush are two examples. He writes, to bone out the birds, leaving the meat on the skin, add pork forcemeat, reshape the birds, place them in a forcemeat-lined oval pie dish, add foie gras and truffles and more forcemeat to cover the birds, cover the pie, egg wash, and bake. When cooled, add woodcock aspic jelly. Simple, right? I can visualize all of that, and I still struggle with it. Now, one of the details Escoffier writes for making the forcemeat is to pound the meat. Now, what? It's so much work, I can't. It just gives me anxiety thinking about it. I'm trying to envision this. It's in some, probably in a bowl, with a wooden pounder of some kind and just beat it into a, just literally pound it into a paste and then add the stuff, then pass that through a fine screen. The amount of effort required to pass raw meat, even cooked meat, it's well, there's six one, half dozen the other. They're both effort. The amount of labor required to pass a meat through a screen, labor and time, it's astonishing how long it takes. And I read these things and it's just like, oh my goodness. Now, those things, those pies, as Coffee calls those pâtés, that's a term you've heard more than just on this show. Probably you've heard me use it elsewhere, and maybe you've heard or seen it on TV shows or at a restaurant. You look through the book's index, does nothing to get clarification on the term. Pâté is followed by the name of the principal ingredient, which is what's going to give it the name of the thing. Now, to make this easy, pâté is basically a sausage, just not in a casing. Something we make at home is similar, even though the fat to meat ratios are off, and that's meatloaf. Now, the pies by name are pâté de jambon or pâté de veau et jambon, and if you're French, I apologize for my atrocious pronunciation. So that's pâté of ham or pâté of veal and ham. And you can get whatever the word is for hare or woodcock or thrush or anything there is that you make a pâté out of it. The pâtés seen in restaurants or in Dean and DeLuca catalogs are pâté en terrine. The tureen is the cooking vessel. Often it is an enameled dish, usually by Le Creuset as a brand name, but it doesn't have to be. Country pâté can be and has been made in bread pans. The basics are the same for the pies and the galantines and pâtés en terrine. A forced meat is basically a sausage by ratios. One part principal meat, one part pork meat, one part pork fat. Now, pork is the primary meat used either as the main thing or as the support thing because it's very bland, doesn't assert any of its own flavor. So when you add it with like venison or duck, it doesn't overpower the other principal ingredient. Escoffier adds eggs to his forced meat, which we didn't always do. Sometimes we did. Eggs, the egg white is adding protein, which sounds like it doesn't really need more, but it's going to help hold everything together. The egg yolk really does a lot of the work of emulsifying, which is, I'm going to get ahead of myself here. So there's something called lecithin in an egg yolk, which is why mayonnaise works, that combines things that don't like to combine, usually oil and water. So it's hard to visualize. It's hard to visualize that the meat is the water part, but kind of it is because it is the oil part. But anyway, the egg yolks do help emulsify things that don't generally want to be together. Then we're going to add garnishes, usually some of the meat of the animal cut into strips, seared to do two things. We talked about that in the galantine. It might do three things. It's going to add color, which is going to be flavor to the outside of the meat. It's going to help shrink the meat so that it won't. So it's going to shrink it down a little bit so when it's cooked in the tureen, it won't shrink more. It may shrink a little bit, but not like it would before, and that will leave you big holes and big gaps, which we don't want to have. Plus, it's going to remove a little bit of the water that in the tureen, in the pâté, is definitely going to be a thing that we don't want to have in there. So, garnishes can be, well, kind of the sky's the limit. Dried fruits, nuts, seasonings, just herbs, liver, you can kind of go crazy with it. For the pâté and terrine we made, we ground the meat through a fine plate grinder, and we did not pass it through a screen. The smaller the grind, the better the texture, meaning it's going to be a smoother texture, and the large pieces of meat that you add for garnish are going to show up better as a contrast. So let's invent a pâté. Actually, we're going to cheat and use one I've already used. Sanitation is key, so everything has to be cold. So the fat, the meat, including the grinder attachment if you're working in the summer or your house is set to sauna. The key thing with the force meat is that we are emulsifying the meat and the fat. I mentioned that. To achieve that, we're going to use the mixer after we've ground the meat and the fat together. For a pâté, let's use venison. You can use any meat, but generally beef is avoided. It's very powerful and will only ever really taste like meatloaf. Venison is also potent, but tastes like venison. In any force meat, the fatty, sinewy cuts are preferred. And there's two main reasons for that. One, in a restaurant setting, I can't get premium price for venison shoulder. Nobody cares. They will pay premium price for a venison saddle. Venison saddle doesn't have a lot of fat. In fact, venison saddle has nearly no fat. So the shoulder and the venison isn't going to be really that fatty anyway, because it's just venisons aren't all that fat even in the winter. But because I can't do much with it as a meat, I can make a stew or a soup or a pâté. So something with lots of sinew. Also, the higher connective tissue it has, the more gelatin it has, which is going to be a benefit to us when this thing finally gets cold. And then same thing with pork. Pork loin, pork tenderloin, is not the first best choice of pork cut for pâté. Pork, well, they call it pork butt, but it's actually the pork shoulder. I don't know why. I'm going to sound like I'm not following my own rules, which are Escoffier's rules. The one part, one part, one part. This venison recipe works, just not up to those rules. So here we go. 2 pounds of venison, 1/2 pound of pork, 1 pound of bacon, 1/2 pound of foie gras. Now, before you choke in your coffee, chicken livers can be used, and if that's the case, then add an additional 1/2 pound of pork fat, or quarter pound of pork fat, or just add more bacon, 1/4 of an onion, 6 juniper berries, 2 eggs, 1 ounce of red wine, 1 ounce of brandy, 4 ounces of heavy cream, 2.5 ounces of all-purpose flour, salt and pepper as needed. There is a thing in pâté land called the panade or panada, and it is designed to, well, several things, but the key thing is that it's going to help hold all of this together. In this particular pâté recipe, the flour is acting as the starch that's going to hold it all together. In some of Escoffier's recipes, he uses plain white bread, crusts removed, that has been soaked into milk. There's a panade called the pâte à choux, which is the thing that you can bake into profiteroles or eclairs. You take that dough, add that to your pâté, you can use that. The real important thing to know about using the pâte à choux panade is it expands. And if you aren't prepared for that, it can be a surprise. So we're going to use flour in this one. It isn't necessary, but it does help. So our procedure, we're going to toast the juniper berries over low heat until you smell the aroma, then take them off the heat. Grind the meats, the fats, the juniper berries, and the onion to a small plate grinder. Place the mixture in the mixing bowl and paddle to combine. Add the eggs, the wine, the brandy, the heavy cream, and the flour, and salt and pepper. Now the emulsion part. Paddle at a brisk speed to make sure the meat and fat combine into a homogeneous mixture. taste test the pate by cooking a small portion in a saute pan on the stove. Add seasoning as necessary. Now, this is patés and the whole world of cold food. Cold deadens the sense of taste and becomes really, it's a very difficult, tricky thing to figure out what flavor should this be when it's hot. Almost a little bit over-seasoned, because when it's cold, it should be close to just right. And that's, I can't guide you on that. The only thing I can tell you is that for food intended to be served cold, know that the cold food seasoned well when it's hot will not seem well seasoned when it's cool. Cold deadens the sense of taste. While you are taste testing, store the bowl of pate in the cooler. Now, garnishes can be nearly anything that goes with venison. Pistachio nuts are pretty, and they're pretty anemic. They don't really assert themselves there. Diced pieces of ham, chives taste good, and little green bits are kind of pretty. Dried cranberries, or cooked diced carrot, or parsnips, or cooked chanterelles, or cooked morels. Anything that makes sense that you have that goes with venison, and maybe you want contrast, I don't know. Paddle your garnishes into your pate. Now, line a bread pan with slices of bacon. So it's going to be kind of hanging over the edge, maybe a little bit, maybe a lot, depending, I guess, on the bacon and the pan. Overlap is good. Overhang is good. Carefully place the pate into the pan. Now, you're going to probably want two tools to do this. One, to scoop the pate and then hold it over the bread pan, and one, to scrape it off. Or you could use a big disher, one of those big little squeezy ice cream scoopy things. Scoop that out, put it into, make a little row of those scoops. You still may need two tools to push the pate flat into the pan. If you have a little cup of water and say you're using a silicone rubber spatula, dip the silicone rubber spatula in water, and then that will help it release from the pate. The thing we're trying to avoid is, since the pate is going to stick to the bacon and quite possibly stick to your utensil, as you're pushing the tool in and out, trying to get the pate smoothed into the corners, it's going to lift out. And I can tell you that that is overwhelmingly frustrating. So a couple of tools should help make this problem less of a problem. When the pate's in the pan and it's all smoothed over and you can dome it a little bit, fold over the bacon. Now, it's possible that the bacon isn't going to reach the center. That's not a problem. Add a couple of strips of bacon lengthwise to fill that gap, and you're ready to go. The tricky part of baking pâtés is the need for a water bath. Usually, a roasting pan will work. You'll need something big enough to hold the bread pan and some water, which will come up about halfway on the bread pan. If you have an oven-proof instant read thermometer, place that in the middle center of the pate pan, of the pate, and plan to leave it in there until the pate is cool. Bake at 350 degrees in the water bath until the temperature reads 145 degrees Fahrenheit. It is not done. However, the pate will easily carry up 20 more degrees. If the pate is overcooked, meaning it gets into the final cook of 170 or 180 degrees, the emulsion might break and the texture of the pate will be grainy. Now, it isn't poison, but it is not all that it could have been. That graininess comes through in the eating process. You'll notice maybe in the cutting that it instead of being smooth like it was when you did the taste test, it might be a little bit like pieces of sand. Not sandy, of course, but that's visually the texture is going to look like. If that's the case, it's not garbage. Just a little bit more mustard and a couple of shots of bourbon will help. Now, Scoffier recommends pressing tureens. We already talked about that with the galantines. It does make a difference. It condenses the meat into a really firm, compact thing to cut. Helps squeeze out some of the fat, which we will save. And depending if you're me or not, you're going to spread that on toast and eat it just like it is. For our country pâté, we're going to forgo that detail. Now, the principal reason to avoid doing that is that it's a mess. It makes a mess. And if you aren't prepared for it, meaning you don't have room in your fridge for it, you don't have pressing boards made, and you don't have weights to put on this thing to weigh it down, then we don't need to press it. And no terrible thing is going to befall us. It's going to be just fine. Let the pâté cool completely before taking it out of the pan. And that's a dense thing. So really, today for tomorrow. I don't know how long it's going to cool in your fridge. I don't know if it's 4, 6, or 8 hours. So let's plan today for tomorrow. To get it out of the pan, run some warm water on the outside of the, because it's probably metal or glass, and that will help loosen the fat, and then the pâté will come out a little bit easier. Hold it over a sheet pan and jostle it a little bit, and it should come out. If it doesn't, if you have a palette knife, I would avoid suggesting to you to use an actual sharp pointy knife, because it's kind of dangerous, or a kitchen knife. No, wrong word. A table knife, a fork, something to help work against the long edge and just sort of work the pâté out. Once the seal is broken, if the fat is melted enough that it can come out, what's holding in is just a vacuum. As soon as you break that seal, it's going to come out very quickly. So the purpose of the sheet pan is to catch it and whatever else comes along with it so you don't make a mess on the counter. So not cleaning up a mess is a lot easier than cleaning up a mess. So avoiding it makes perfect sense. You'll probably want to leave the bacon on, but extra fat that's there, use a rubber spatula or something smooth, scrape that off, leave it within a container. There's nothing wrong with it. Use it for cooking eggs, spread it on toast, eat it by the spoonful. It's not garbage. Pâté, cut it about 1/4 inch thick, serve with excellent whole grain mustard, some cornichons, and good toast points or crackers. Cornichons are nice because they're very tart. They can be any kind of pickle that you have or that you want. And fresh fruit is also a really good accompaniment, although in the middle of February, so much on fresh, whatever, you're going to get Peru fresh fruit. But lots of things go with that. And beer or bourbon. Now, the timeline is short, but a pâté is also a spectacular game day nosh if you are a particular fan of, say, the Ravens or the 49ers playing in the Super Bowl. Now, the king daddy of terrines is the pâté en croûte. That's a cross between the pâté en terrine and the pies. They're made in a very special kind of terrine mold that completely comes apart, because there's no other way to get them out. They don't come out of the ceramic ones, the enamel ones, and it's just the wrong design. There is both a skill and an art to pâté en terrine and pâté en croûte. Pâté en croûte is the one I meant to say. It takes the pâté skills and the pastry skills and the saucier skills. There's consommé involved. It makes it all amazing. Beyond amazing when done well, and so much less so when not done well. When Todd and I were at the Governor's Club, Chef Shoup required a pâté service tray of 5 different terrines, and one had to be pâté en croûte. Now, that was during legislative session when it was very, very busy. And it was an impressive presentation, I can tell you that. Next up in Chapter 11 is salads, salad dressings, and composed salads. I bet you didn't know salad Waldorf is a classical French salad. All right, folks, that's going to do it. I think that's a lot. I'm feeling better and happy the internet works again. There was a fiber optic cable that was cut. Seems to be repaired, so that's good. I have no idea how it came to be cut. Insert your conspiracy ideas here, but it's back. I'm mostly up to scratch. Still something is hanging on. Gargling with salt water, half a teaspoon per cup of water, did wonders. Gargled as many times a day as was necessary when my throat was sore, and it was some days up to 10 times. It helped ease the pain, and the salt was killing the little bacteria thingies or whatever they were that caused the inflammation. So less inflammation was good. It helped also move out the gunk. Those old farts, they know their stuff. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon.
Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.